Welcome to FinTech's DEI Discussions podcast series. This is the Humans of FinTech chapter, and we are here today to celebrate the wins, raise awareness of the challenges, and walk the talk for change across the entire financial technology industry. Today, we are joined by Trier Bryant, a transformational people-first leadership consultant, former Air Force captain and 17-year DEI leader at Twitter and Goldman Sachs, and chief people officer at a B2B and B2C asset management fintech. She is here today to share how she walks the talk for inclusion in our sector and what more she wants done. Trier, welcome. I am super excited to have you with us today.
Happy to be here with you, Nadia. Thank you for having me.
Amazing. I am in awe of everything that you've achieved. Air Force captain was like the first thing that really jumped out to me. There's so much that you've done and there's so much you do. It'd be great if you could start off by telling us a bit more about your role and the journey into this line of work.
Thank you for the question, Nadia. I actually honestly don't get it often enough, right? How did I get into this space and this role? And it actually started when I was very young. I would say middle school. I went to a predominantly white middle school in Atlanta, Georgia, and was one of less than a handful of Black students. And I understood that experience and the impact that it had on me. Fast forward a couple of years later, when I was in another predominantly white school for high school, but that school actually took the time and acknowledged diversity and acknowledged and put an effort into inclusion. And my experience was very different. And I think that was the first time that I understood when we acknowledge the differences at times or the representation or are things equitable and are people having an inclusive experience, I saw firsthand how that impacted my high school experience. And then that's what made me go into the Air Force Academy with eyes wide open and saying, hey, there's an opportunity to do some work there, which then translated into my Air Force career. And then here I am just stumbling into this role and seeing that professionally, I could be a leader that could help drive change within these organizations.
So important, I think, to hear this background and what really got you deciding this is something that needs to change. And I feel like I'm the person to make that impact and using your experiences to drive that. So I wanted for us to open up a bit more about the DEI work you do and what makes the most impact.
Yeah. So I think that at first, when I stumbled into diversity, equity, and inclusion, at the end of the day, it was really about diversity. I think understanding the nuances between the three are very important right now. We use them as synonyms, but they're so different. Diversity are the numbers, right? It's the different elements that come together. It is the numbers in an organization. It is the composition. Equity, though, equity is about how do we free the processes within our organization to be free from bias and favoritism so that it can be equitable. And then inclusion is what does that feel like? What do the individuals or groups feel like in an organization having a seat at the table on what that experience is? But when I first started doing this work, I can admit it was all about the numbers. But as I learned more and more, particularly getting out of the Air Force and going and spending time in the people and HR space, then I started to understand what we could do when it comes to a DE&I strategy across the entire employee lifecycle. So that can be from talent acquisition to onboarding to talent development, performance management, compensation, communications and brand strategy, even on the business side. And then that is really what gets you to have a very layered and impactful comprehensive strategy that really can drive, not only drive change, but also sustain the change that we need within organizations.
Really like that point about sustaining change, because this has got to last. And it's often change of behaviors that have been in place for such a long time. So I think that's a hugely important point. And pulling on that thread, I'd love to ask the question around how we make inclusion more inclusive. And I know we've had a previous conversation about this, so yeah. Please share with the audience. But yeah. I'm really fascinated by your answer here.
Yeah. And sustaining the change. And like you said, Nadia, the behaviors of change, one of the things that we say on our team and in our organization is that DE&I, it is not a sprint. but it's also not a marathon. Because for those of us who have run a marathon, thank goodness there's a finish line and then we're done. DE&I is a journey. And so when we go in and we talk to leaders and organizations, it is a journey. We are thinking about this month by month, quarter by quarter, year by year. Now, we don't have to go in and boil the ocean, but we do have to think about it as a journey that is a continued and constant investment. The way that we think about a product roadmap or the way that we think about a revenue strategy, we don't just say, hey, we're going to hit a revenue goal and then we're done. We continue to build on that. And it's, we have to look at our DE&I strategies and our initiatives in the same way. But to your point also, we've also found that oftentimes with the best intentions, efforts, inclusion efforts end up being exclusive. And so without the proper communication and education, it can exclude folks rather than bring them along. An example of this is oftentimes, let's say an organization will have roundtables saying, hey, we want to hear from our underrepresented groups or communities within the company about DE&I. And then you will highlight or find those groups and you'll say, hey, how are you feeling? What are your thoughts? And while that's absolutely fantastic, the majority within your organization has a point of view on DE&I as well. And it is equally important. And so how do you promote and execute on your initiatives and strategy in an inclusive way while still having targeted strategies for underrepresented groups, but bringing everyone along? So when we go in and we do roundtables and listening sessions, we divide them in a way that every single employee, regardless of how you identify, has an opportunity to share, whether that's by office, whether that's remote, whether that is by level. Everyone has an opportunity to come and share their perspective, but also listen.
And I think that's so important, that listening piece, and something I'm really passionate about. You listen to learn, not to excuse or to rebut, but to genuinely understand that person's experience. And I know that all this work that you do with many different companies, it's actually about getting them to understand that the baseline of getting DEI right is a worthwhile investment. And I can imagine this is a challenge. So I'd love for you to share some of that with the audience as well.
Yeah, it's for some reason, in some organizations, it still is a challenge. What I can tell you, Nadia, is I remember my first meeting at Goldman Sachs with then the person who led human capital management, Edith Cooper, a fantastic leader, a fantastic just woman and a Black woman at that, who was leading human capital management at Goldman. And I'll never forget in our first conversation, I was so excited to go in and tell her why we have to double down on diversity, equity, inclusion, why it's important. And this was a muscle that was very strong for me, having been in the military, spending time at the Pentagon, talking to senior Air Force leaders, talking to senior DOD leaders, the why behind it. And I came in very prepared to tell the why. And before I could even get through my go-to first bullet, Edith just stops me and goes, no, Trier, we get the why here at Goldman Sachs. I need to understand what you're going to do about it. And it totally blew me away. I was absolutely unprepared because I had spent, I would say in a conversation, I was prepared. And it was typical to spend 70 to 80% talking about the why. And then once I got the leader past that, then let's talk about what we're going to do about it. But Edith was like, no, we get it here. We have multiple business cases. Trier, what are you going to do about it? And so for those that are still needing to have the discussion on why, and I get it for some leaders, there's so much research out there that shows linking business goals to your DE&I efforts and how it strengthens your commercial potential, your bottom line. We know that leaders care about the bottom line, and there's data out there that can drive that and bring that together. We know that even in the 2022 research market analysis, we see that companies earn 2.0 times more per employee and are 35% more productive. I don't know what other numbers, right, people need, but the numbers are there. The research is there. But let's talk about the other point. And I think this is the most important point. It is about our people. At the foundation, diversity, equity, and inclusion is about optimizing our people's talent. talent. We need them to thrive. We want them to thrive versus surviving. We want to get the best out of our people. And at the end of the day, that to me is the foundation of diversity, equity, and inclusion. And people may say, Treya, that's for underrepresented groups, but what about the majority group? And that is a population that I encourage all leaders to understand. If your cis straight white men are not having inclusive experiences, are not feeling heard, do not feel like they're getting paid, are having gaps in their experience, I assure you any other group that you cut or that you go and talk to is going to have a worse experience. Your majority group, and in, again, in a lot of organizations, that would be cis straight white men, they're going to be a data point. And then the other one that I would say, Nadia, that we talk a lot about in the United States is what is the experience of Black women? Because in the US, the experience of your Black women can also tell you how painful it is for different groups. And so those are the two groups, understanding a kind of opposite ends of the spectrum to give you an understanding of where you need to start and where you need to put your resources and your time. Again, prioritize, because we're not here to boil the ocean.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really like your point of almost two ends of the spectrum. But the fact that we want to listen to all of that, we want to understand Everyone. That experience. And I really like your point about this isn't survival. This should be, and our commitment to people in the workplace, let alone wider society, should be about thriving. And I love the stats that you shared, and you know, you have helped multiple people be better managers. And when we spoke about this previously, you've helped them reduce quiet quitting, you've improved engagement, you've improved working environments, in particular environments that work to reduce employee stress. This is something I know our audience will want to hear more about so they can start implementing change. Tell us more.
Yeah, I think this is actually one of my favorite things to talk about, Nadia, because I think that we're moving too quickly past COVID. And I don't even mean that from are people wearing masks or not, or from a health perspective. I'm talking about that we can all acknowledge that and accept a baseline that globally, every single person that we engage with, we work with on a professional or personal level, just went through a traumatic experience. And anyone who's gone to therapy or works with a therapist understands the time of recovery and healing from a traumatic experience. And so when I say that we're moving too quickly past COVID, what I mean is that I think organizations and leaders are moving way too quick and not truly understanding and pausing to say, what does recovery look like for our employees? What does healing look like for our employees coming out of this very traumatic experience that had a lot of different repercussions for various different people. And that healing and that recovery are going to be different. And so there were so many changes and transitions. And so for organizations and leaders to show back up and say, all right, COVID's gone, back in the office, when people's day-to-day at homes change, whether it was jobs lost, jobs gained, children, childcare, there were so many things that occurred. And so I think a lot of the quiet quitting and the psychological disengagement from work also is a reflection of where people are. I think that people are really trying to survive and do the best they can. And organizations, a lot of organizations are not doing their part to help them. And Nadia, I might have a disillusioned perspective on this because I come from the military. I professionally grew up in the military, where in the military, you take care of your people because the people take care of the mission. And in also taking care of your people, it's an extension of their family as well. When someone deploys, the unit that's back at home is contacting their family, taking care of their family, making sure that they're okay. And it goes above and beyond just, hey, did you get your work done? It's really about the whole person. And I think that there's something too that we can learn and really start to ask the question. And it's simple, right? When leaders come in and they say, Nadia, well, Treya, what do our people need? Why are you asking me? I'm not in your organization. But to pause and ask, genuinely ask from a place of not just empathy, but compassion. And the difference between empathy and compassion is action. Empathy is, I feel your pain. compassion is I want to relieve it. I want to do something about it. And I think that there's a huge opportunity for organizations to understand what that action is and then step into that for people within their organization.
Yeah, I really like that difference that you've just made there about doing something about this rather than just saying, okay, I hear you. What are we going to do to drive that change? And I'm a big advocate for us all championing inclusion. But I look back over the past few years, and as you say, we are still recovering. We are recovering from a lot of trauma. So how far would you say we've actually come from for our inclusion work?
Yeah, if you would have asked me 2 weeks ago, my answer might be a little different, as you know, it for anyone who is following particularly the news in the US of just this day-to-day attack on DEI and the rhetoric that we're hearing around it. But I think it's one of those, unfortunately, it's one of those things where we are making progress. However, it doesn't always feel that way, because I think that for those of us in this space as DEI practitioners, we get super excited and we have to celebrate the wins to make one step forward. But then it often feels like we make one step forward and then something happens and we take three steps back. And there's a population of people that feel, as we make strides when it comes to diversity, equity, and inclusion, that they're losing, that as DEI wins, that there's a population and a group that's losing. And we've all got to get on the same page to understand that, why would we not want the best talent in our organizations? Why would we not want to optimize for that talent? And why would we not want to rework, retool, and improve what we're doing to elevate everything within our companies? And that we can have all of that and we can do it in a better way. But I understand people being frustrated. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. Yeah. So actually, let's do something different. Let's acknowledge what works, what doesn't work, and let's do better. There are absolutely organizations that have different initiatives that are getting it right. And working with experts, whether that's experts that you bring in and build a team in your organization or experts working externally and partnering with consultants, it doesn't matter. My biggest ask, though, to leaders and organizations is to look at your diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts the way that you would look at your revenue strategy, your product strategy, that is nimble, that you revisit, and you ensure that there is a viable path forward to success based off of the environment and the conditions. And when we can put that level of scrutiny, effort, and consistent dedication to DEI and make it a priority, that's when we will yield the outcomes that we know are possible consistently, that again, ultimately impact our people.
And you know what, the way that you've just described all of that, it's almost broken a barrier in my brain. So I often, in my line of work, I am hit with challenges around individuals who feel threatened by this change. And just that sentence you said about people looking at what they're losing, actually, I look at that and I think, what will we be gaining? And actually having the focus on that gain and everything that you said there about turning that into action, because we all have a role to play. Inclusion includes everybody, but how do we get everybody to feel included? And this podcast itself, I always intro it saying, we're here today to walk the talk for change. We talk about it, but now let's go and do it. So my final question to you is, what would you like to see more of for workplace inclusion from our audience?
Yeah, going back to my previous ask of leaders is, we have to put pen to paper. We have to put pen to paper. DEI can no longer be this 30,000 foot discussion, ambiguous conversation. Oh, it's the right thing to do. It's the business case. Spend time to understand your business case. And if you don't have one or you don't want to spend the time, shoot me an email. I'm happy to give you several, right? But how do we invest and put that rigor into understanding a company's business case for DEI, and that it is an impactful endeavor and then put pen to paper on strategy, the same you would everything else. And the bar that I think that we can use for that is, how do you create space to talk about a DE&I strategy to your board every quarter during your board meeting in a way that you feel it's time well spent for them? Because no one wants to go to their board and be like, hey, we're going to spend 10 minutes talking about this and then say, hey, that was 10, it was a waste of 10 minutes of our board's time. But you will be shocked when you have a business case and you present it in a way that you can actually get your board even to understand, oh, wow, this does impact our ROI. This does impact our bottom line. This does impact retention because we know that hiring is expensive. Filling headcount is expensive. There's dollars lost there. And for those of you who are on boards, ask, challenge the companies that you help advise, right? What more can we do? I want to hear about this. What is your methodology in your approach? And one of the things that I'll leave your audience with, Nadia, is there's the previous chief diversity officer at Netflix, Verna. She's fantastic. But one of the things that she said and that she challenged Netflix's leadership is she said, I don't hold you accountable. I hold you capable. And they have a very different shift on leaders being capable. And I think that's really important because she's, you are absolutely responsible and accountable, but you are also capable of this. That means that yes, you can do it. You are capable of doing it. And now it is your responsibility to go work with the team of experts that she provided and say, what is our strategy? Where's the goal line? And how are we going to make sure that we get across that line? So let's all know that we are capable.
Wow, Tria, that is a wonderful way to draw this podcast to a close. Like how inspiring and empowering that we are all capable for this change. And thank you so much for sharing all your insights with us today. I feel like I've learned loads and I know that that'll be the same for the audience. So let's listen, let's learn, let's walk the talk.